Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
He is the professor. John, we heard from Pete Carroll. No Earl Thomas as expected, but we did see Frank Clark out there. Yep. What did you make of today's practice?
It was kind of as predicted. I mean, again, Frank didn't practice. I guess he has a little bit of a hamstring injury, so he couldn't do anything. Byron Maxwell was out there as expected. He practiced and was working with the first team. So, you know, it looks like everybody but Earl Thomas is here. They gave Doug Baldwin the day off just because, I guess, you know, he's worked hard this offseason and worked hard so far, so he kind of got a rest day. But, you know, just kind of first day of mini camp, and, you know, I thought some interesting things.
Yeah, Pete was he was pretty happy with David Moore and mentioned that jump, you know, from freshman to sophomore, so to speak. That was pretty cool because that's a, you know, receiver. That position is one that, you know, maybe. I heard today that Paul Richardson, I think Brent Stecker from 710sports.com told me that there's a Twitter picture of Paul Richardson with tacos and he's got ketchup on him.
He put ketchup on his tacos?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Well, I'm glad he left. That's awful. No, that's a culinary abomination.
It made me kind of like him because I like to put ketchup on all kinds of things, too. Macaroni and cheese, scrambled eggs, things like that.
That's normal stuff.
Okay.
Ketchup doesn't go on tacos. Salsa goes on tacos, Dave.
But, yeah, it just, yeah, I know. You're right. And hot sauce. But it just reminded me of what a good player he was and that, you know, they are kind of hurting a little bit at receiver. And David Moore, boy, he's a big dude. I remember, John, the one thing about him at the combine, I think he had like 27 reps at the 225 bench. I mean, it's always cool to see those guys step up in that second year.
Well, it looks like really the competition is really stepping up at the wide receiver position, particularly for that last wide receiver spot. Stringfellow looked real good today. You know, Brandon Marshall really isn't practicing yet, and you know, I'm sure that he aspires to be more than just the five. But no, there's a lot of extra bodies there for one or two spots.
How are the 12s going to feel about DeMaurier Stringfellow competing for a spot here with the Seahawks? Would he have to make amends? Because Stringfellow is one of the guys, the Huskies that got into a...
Him and Clyre Myers.
Yes, exactly. Siler. Hey, I'm going to screw up his name now.
Siler Miles.
Siler Miles. I was going to call him Siley Myrus, yeah. Which is not his name at all.
Well, he wasn't... Stringfellow wasn't the main culprit, was he? It was more of Clyre Myers.
Yeah, I believe Clyre Myers was the one who was the Broncos fan because he's from Colorado.
Right.
But I think Stringfellow might have been the one who did most of the damage.
Clyre Myers, Clyre Myers, Clyre Myers, Clyre Myers.
Well, let's not remind the 12.
You might, just so the people don't know, remind them what they did.
It was after the Seahawks Broncos Super Bowl, and there was an altercation outside of a fraternity house in the Greek part of the university district. And I don't know if they got arrested right then, but I know Stringfellow was eventually dismissed from the team because of that, and he wound up going to Nebraska, but he never really played there and then went to Ole Miss.
Well, it's consistent with what I experienced because the Seattle Seahawks fans were great. I mean, 2-14, they didn't even boo us. You lose one game in Denver, and they're booing you off the field and calling you all kinds of nasty names. So, yeah, that was consistent to the Bronco fans.
John, I thought it was interesting that he singled out David Moore and was wondering about Amara Darbo. You see him being on the bubble this year?
I think he could be. I mean, right now you'd say he's competing for the number three job. Jaron Brown's going to be in the mix, and we'll see where Brandon Marshall fits in. But, yeah, and he probably needs to pick things up because, I mean, I know early in the OTAs when, like the first two that were open, he wasn't doing a lot. I remember the first open OTA to the media, you know, he was kind of stretching and really seemed like he had some tight leg muscles. But, you know, right now, and again, understanding that, you know, it takes time to learn things in any offense, particularly if you're a wide receiver, and sometimes it takes you into the second and third year. I mean, if you think about it, since Pete has been here, now, again, this is all with Daryl Bevel's offense. I mean, really, the only two guys that really picked up things fast as rookies were Doug Baldwin and maybe Tyler Lockett. Everybody else had to kind of mature into their second and third years. I mean, what, it took really till the end of the third year for Paul Richardson to really hit his stride, and then he did hit his stride. So, you know, I know that I was talking to somebody today, and here's one of the more unusual stats, and this is a true stat. back in the old days, back when Dave played and before the new CBA came in 2011, is that it takes you 3 years to make up for the number of practice snaps that you would get. 3 years to catch up to the old days. Think about that. 3 years for 1 year of what Dave went through.
Because of all the limited practices.
That's correct.
Yeah, and full speed. And especially for offensive linemen, man. I mean, offensive and defensive linemen getting the right fits and everything because you're not going full speed, you're not going full contact. That's interesting.
Dave, what was it like in the olden days before the forward pass was invented?
John, I'm at the point now when I feel proud when you say that I played in the old days.
Well, yeah. What's wrong with the old days? I mean, hey, I covered in the old days even before you played back in the 70s. And, I mean, that was such a different game back then. I mean, it's hard to even compare it to now because it was all running. It was defense. I mean, you'd go through games and you'd have a Bob Greasy lucky to throw 10 or 11 passes in a game because they were running so much.
Remember, I've told this story before. My first year in Denver, we had five straight double-day practices with full pads, full contact. And afterwards, we were going to lunch. I think I was wearing like a tank top or something, and Elway told me I looked like a leopard because I had all these bruises all over me. We're all beat up and everything. I mean, it was just, yeah, it was just entirely different. Now, I would say this, they're smarter in some regards. When I was in Denver, what we used to do when Fire Marshal Bill was there, they would have all of the contact 9-on-7, which is the run game, and you'd have your pads on, you'd go through your warm-ups, and then you would take off your pads for the rest of practice. And you'd go full speed for the first part, and then later on. Because I do think that there's some value. But, John, I don't see that genie ever being stuffed back in the bottle as far as, contact practice. I don't think – it just seems like the veterans, all, you know, the guys that are mainly in control of the union are like, look, this is going to save our bodies and things like that. But – I really do think it's handicapped the game a little bit.
Well, you can understand the rationale, though, and I know talking about this, the rationale is that, you were back in the old days, I mean, they were getting 57% to 58% of the cap, and when they wanted to make the adjustment to take it down to 47, and you have, a bunch of offensive linemen, and I'm saying that positively, in there saying, now, wait a second, let's make this simple. If you're taking away money from us, then we should have to do less. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean do less on the field during games, but do less as far as working at the facility, being in practice. And so it's not that they're withholding their services, but it's like, and you can understand that rationale. If we're going to be paid less on a percentage, then we should be able to do less.
Yeah, I get that rationale. I also think it's short-sighted. The players would be better served trying to find a strategy, and maybe there just isn't one. Maybe the deck's so stacked and the owners have so much money and so many players live paycheck to paycheck, because the better thing is to do what's best for the game. That's what's in the player's best interest, is to do what's best for the game and to try and hold on to as much money as they can get, because if getting less practice time results in an inferior product, ultimately that's going to mean that there's less money for the players to get the 47% of.
Right, but nobody's ever going to see that, I think, because it's counterintuitive. The only people, John, would be the coaches. I mean, they're the ones that I think really suffer from this because, mm-hmm. They're trying to coach guys up when they can't go full speed. So.
No, agreed, and that's the perplexing thing, and fortunately, we don't have to worry about that for the next couple years. Coaches have to worry about it because they have to prepare for that, but who knows how it's going to turn out in the next collective bargaining agreement, which is going to be a nasty one.
Hey, John, I want to ask you this, because we talked a little bit about this at the beginning of the show, about Danny threw out the number over-under, 8 wins for the Seahawks. I took the over. I think you're on the over on that. Is that
I'm
right?
At 9 wins, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think a lot of this comes from the perception of Pete Carroll and that he's been discounted as an effective coach just because of, you've got Michael Bennett saying, I was reading books, and then Sherm with the, kind of hinting that, he's run his course and all that. And I think that Pete is, look, he's still one of the best two or three. I like Mike Tomlin, Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, and I feel like a lot of this, setting this number at 8 wins has a little bit to do with that people think that they're underestimating Pete's ability as a coach, which I totally disagree with.
No, I don't think that's really pinned on him. I mean, certainly if you get the over-analyzing critics, then that's going to go to Pete. But when you look at it, I mean, it's a real simple thing. I mean, last year the Seahawks had eight players that were in the top 100 in the NFL Network's top 100 this year. They have four. Now, there's two other players that I'm not including. I mean, Cam Chancellor's still on the roster, but I'm not including him. And then Richard Sherman, who's down in San Francisco. So when you take it from eight to four, that's a significant change. And then, of course, you're still looking from afar, and you're saying, okay, they've gone from eight Pro Bowlers on defense to three, and one of the three is Earl Thomas, and now he's not going to be there through training camp. So that's a significant drop-off. But now what you have to try to do is look at the players who might step up and who can have breakout years. I mean, Jaron Brown would be one, I think, that, or Jaron Reed would be one that I think could take a breakout year. Frank Clark could have a breakout year. Shaq Griffin could have a breakout year. I mean, if these guys step up, and Delano Hill did some good things in practice today, Tedrick Thompson seemed to be getting a little bit more time. You know, so it's a matter, like it was in 2011 and 2012, if there's a new core group that can step up with the coaching of Pete Carroll, then you can see that that could work into better than eight wins.
How good do you think Frank Clark will be, John? Because there's some question about him being out there without Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill now.
I think he can be fine. I mean, you know, he's going to go through the same thing as DeMarcus Lawrence went last year. And DeMarcus Lawrence went big. I mean, DeMarcus then got a $17 million offer as the franchise player. It's a guaranteed contract. And, you know, he stepped up his game and went to the Pro Bowl. And, you know, you've seen the success that Clark's had in the first 2 years, 9-10 sack seasons. Now he's going to be the main guy because, you know, we can say, and naturally he is going to get double teamed. That's going to be a natural thing. Because unless somebody steps up on the other side, it's going to be a little bit tougher. But also his playing time is going to increase because now he's not just the third defensive end. And so with more playing time, he can probably get more sacks. And if he can get more sacks, he can get more money.
Talking to John, Professor, with Earl Thomas not being here, the first step is the financial repercussions. He could lose up to and be fined up to $80,000.
$84,435.
If he doesn't show up for any of the days of this 3-day minicamp. The next step will be, I think it's $40,000 a day. Is that right?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Once training camp starts.
And then once you go past, I think it's like 2 weeks, then they can start docking you percentages of your signing bonus.
Correct. And they can get up to 25% of the signing bonus back total. Mm-hmm. Is what they could ask for. The next step is game checks. And Earl, the salary that he's scheduled to make could be $500,000 per game. I guess the question is, do you see Seattle just waiting this out and believing that Earl's not going to forfeit that much money before he ends up turning out and reporting? We know he'd report for at least half the season, yeah. So the contract doesn't toll. What do you think Seattle's approach is going to be here?
I think they just be patient, but listen. I mean, if you can get, for example, an offer, and to me, I mean, I think it's still going to be tough for Dallas to get in the mix because, you know, they didn't step up at the draft. I mean, they weren't offering, I don't even know if they fully offered a number three, but they weren't going to go higher than a three. And if you're Seattle, you can't do that deal. You can't do it. So now, if Houston steps up, I think that could be an interesting ball game because, you know, Andre Hall has lymphoma and is now going to miss the season. He's their starting free safety. They just signed Tyrann Mathieu. And so if you're Houston and you're battling Tennessee, Jacksonville, and you have a chance to pick up Earl Thomas, even if it's for a third-round pick or a second-round pick, and you already have a second-round pick from Seattle with the Dwayne Brown trade, to me, it's a no-brainer. I think you've got to consider it because, you know, you think about, you know, they have Deshaun Watson coming off his ACL. They have a decent running game with Lamar Miller. I don't know how good their offensive line is, but on defense, J.J. Watt is coming back. You know, they've got Jadeveon Clowney. They've got some decent guys in the secondary, but now they have that one open spot at free safety. You put a Pro Bowler like Joe Thomas there, now you're cooking. And if it's only going to be for a second or a third round pick, to me, it's a bargain.
Hear anything more on Aaron Donald, John? I guess he didn't show up to camp.
No, the count is now 9 as far as guy. And again, we're still trying to figure out what's going on with Mike Thomas of the New Orleans Saints. But, you know, all the predictable ones did not show. Le'Veon Bell did not show. Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack, they did not show. A little bit of a couple of surprises. Again, there's Donald Stevenson of Cleveland. We have no idea what's going on there, but he didn't show. But, you know, they end up saying that there's something going on with him. They're not saying exactly what it is, but he's getting his fine for not being there. So most of the ones are predictable. David Johnson of the Arizona Cardinals stepped up, and now he's out. So it's eight total, and now Julio Jones, as we talked about yesterday, is out.
Yeah, David Johnson played one game or something like that.
Yeah, did he break his wrist last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Also, earlier, John, I mentioned, I think, you know, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick, Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin does a really good job in Pittsburgh managing a lot of drama. I mean, you've got Le'Veon Bell and Brown.
You've got the ultimate drama in Ben Roethlisberger.
And, of course, Ben Roethlisberger. And not only is he winning there, but, you know, just managing those guys seemed to keep James Harrison happy, too, somehow. So... yeah, do you also rate him as one of the better coaches in the league?
I do, yeah. No, because, I mean, look at the success he has. Look at his winning percentage. But there is actually, it's interesting, one of the minority owners of the Steelers wanted him fired. Now, of course, remember, if you're a minority owner of the Steelers, you're a minority owner. You don't have any voice. It's going to be Rooney's making the call, and the Rooney's, you know, are, just like the Maras in New York, among the loyalist owners that you can have, and they're not big proponents of change. And so that's why, I mean, you think about this, and this is one of the more amazing stats that you can think, that since 1969, they've only had three head coaches.
Wow.
They've had Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Mike Tomlin.
Hey, John, how big a deal is this Dante Johnson, Pete Carroll telling reporters today, the cornerback that the Seahawks acquired from the 49ers? He started 16 games last year. He's going to undergo surgery on a broken foot, the injury he suffered 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, in fact, it was funny. We were talking about that right before the beginning of practice. I know Michael Sean Duggar says, have you seen anything of Dante Johnson? I said, the only thing I saw from him in the first OTA that was open to the media, I saw him walking to the locker room with some kind of an injury. Now I guess we find out that's what kind of an injury it is. And, you know, the fact that it's now gone so late with a foot surgery, that's going to be a big setback.
Byron Maxwell was here today, as you mentioned, John. He's been absent for some of the OTAs or any of the OTAs that have been open to reporters. I think that there's a sense that he didn't feel he got a high enough salary as a potential starting cornerback. Do you think there's a chance he doesn't end up making the team?
No. No, not the way that they treated him today and not the way they talked about him last week, because, you know, I'm sure it's just like the same thing we talked about, you know, with the CBA. If you're making less, you might want to do less, but understand where Byron Maxwell is as a professional. He, you know, he didn't blink an eye last year when he came back and signed for the minimum just when Richard Sherman had his injury. And within, what, a quarter, he was out there starting and doing a good job and feeling natural. I think that you can see he's a quick study because he knows this defense so well. I mean, when you look at what, is he the senior guy on the defense knowing the system? And so, you know, he came in today, and guess what? He was running first team. So, you know, doing that when you miss the entire OTAs, I think it kind of shows what they think of him, and they're counting on him to start and have the long sleeves in practice.
Hey, John, what do you make of Robert Kraft? There was some audio of him talking about these rumors about Gronk, and he said, you know, it was hogwash and that people shouldn't just be able to say things. I think it was the translation, sort of. I'm like, really? No more First Amendment?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want. We're not obligated to get Bill's okay before we make observations.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a prediction, but I don't know. He was rambling on. It's the first time I thought, you know what? This guy could actually probably fall asleep while he's talking.
Well, of course, you remember, so he boring. Lost his Super Bowl ring to Putin, so.
Oh, Bob Kraft, that's right.
Yeah, Bob Kraft. I mean, yeah. Here, Mr. Putin, here, take a look at the Super Bowl ring. And Putin walks away. Hey, thanks. Catch you later.
Did Putin tried to claim it was a gift, right?
Yeah,
that
exactly.
He was given to it?
Mm-hmm.
He was given to
back,
him?
Yes.
It's like, come and get it, big tough guy.
Yeah, let's put it this way. I'm walking out the Patriot way with the ring.
It's like, don't make me send Rocky over there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pretty crazy. Or Drago.
So we're going to finally see Andrew Luck, you think, John?
Yeah. He threw 10 passes for 10-yard throws today, and it looks like he's on schedule. And I know even after practice, I guess it's some charity event, Jim Irsay, the owner of the team, said that he's expected to be full go by the start of training camp as far as throwing.
That's so weird to think that he missed an entire season. Can we think, have there been other quarterbacks as good as him in his prime that have just been hurt like that in his throwing shoulder? I know we've had knee injuries, like Brady blew out his knee. I can't remember that happening to a quarterback.
Well, not this long, because, I mean, what you're talking about, what would 17, 18 months? Because he, well, 17 months, because he had the surgery in January 2017. And, you know, this is really now the first time he's, I mean, I think he threw a little bit last year, but it's the first thing he, I mean, he hasn't, when they shut him down last year, he hasn't thrown since. So this is the first throwing he's really had in like 17 months. I mean, to me, the only one that kind of makes memory is like when Jim Plunkett got beat up with the New England Patriots, and it took him like about 2 years with the Raiders to start regaining his form because it was just pounded so much. And it was the same thing with Andrew Luck. I mean, what he claimed they had the shoulder injury, I think it was a Tennessee game in like November of 2016, and he tried to play through it, and he just could. I mean, he really, what, he played like a year or something like that. It was bad how the injury was, and so I think the body just needed that break.
We're talking to Justin Coleman at 5 o'clock today, John. What's the report on him? I mean, he's really being an undrafted guy out of Tennessee, and he's parlayed his way into a pretty good career so far.
Well, he really has, and in fact, you know, when you start talking about, I mean, he's going to be the guy that you don't mention when you start talking about contract extensions. And, you know, I think there's an, I don't know where the team stands. I've not talked to anybody on the team about it, but I would have to think that on contract extensions, he potentially could be the first guy to get one. And the reason I say that is he's the slot cornerback, so he's not going to get the $14 million deal. He's not going to get the $9 million deal. A slot cornerback in Miami last week, Bob McCain, he ended up getting $6.75 million. Now, I don't think Justin Coleman would get that here, but I think that, you know, I think you got to really look to get him signed because he was quietly one of the better slot cornerbacks in the league. I know that Danny's buddies over at Pro Football Focus, I think, rated him like the fourth or fifth best slot cornerback in the league last season. He played really well.
He really did. He actually played well outside a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does a very good job for not a very big guy, taking on blocks and holding edges and things like that. So, yeah. Oh, more contract mess, huh?
Yeah, we'll see exactly how all that goes. Professor, we always love it. Thank you so much, man.
Hey, thank you.
If you missed any of the Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Pete Carroll addressed Earl Thomas's absence. You'll hear what he said next.
You're listening to Danny Dave and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is the happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distilling's BSB, their brown sugar bourbon. And it's not a surprise that Earl Thomas was not present. Frank Clark was here, though, held out of practice because of a hamstring issue. Byron Maxwell, who'd been absent from the voluntary workouts, he was present as well, but Earl Thomas was not here. And Pete Carroll, he was asked after the practice what his thoughts were about his all-world free safety being absent.
We kind of had heard, you know, that he was, you know, he was making that choice. You know, I'm really going to, I wish he was here, and that would be nice. But we're focusing on the guys that are here, and we'll see how that goes.
This is very standard to how Pete reacts to absences, and we've seen holdouts. Cam, Marshawn, two players that have held out, or whether back when it was rookies, Russell Okung, his first training camp after he was the number six overall pick, he wasn't present for a couple weeks in a contract holdout. Pete is very consistent where he says, we wish they were here. He doesn't ever criticize the holdouts, thinking that sort of leaving the door open is the quickest way to get them back in the building. Is that going to be the best approach here?
Yeah, I mean, every good coach does that. And Pete has been really good about that, was talking about the players that are here. You hear that from Belichick, too. But I remember hearing that from Pete from day one. And it applies to when a guy gets hurt. But look, the good coaches do that. And I think, I'll say this, Chuck Knox was able to sell me on that, hey, you know, you go take care of your money with the business guys and come down here and play. You know, when you're ready to play, we'll go get after it. Now, you know, maybe he's going, you know, upstairs and saying lowball him or something like that. But he always gave you the illusion that, look, that's not me. That's not us. You know, we're downstairs. That's upstairs, basically. And that's what Pete has done a very good job of. And, you know, look, just think how bad that would sound if you were like, well, we sure wish he was here. You know, he has a contract. I don't understand why he's not here. I mean, that would totally throw a monkey wrench in the whole thing. So he's doing a great job there. I like the way Pete puts it. And even if we know, hey, look, maybe he's in there talking to Schneider about what he's worth and whatnot, he's at least, you know, selling it. And for sure, I think Earl knows that he is always going to be on the player's side.
Yeah, well, I agree. I mean, Pete Carroll, you knew he'd say the right thing today. But it's one thing for Earl Thomas to have to go through $84,000 in fines for missing three practices this week. I'm curious to see what's going to happen, though, if it gets to the regular season where he'd be missing $500,000 a game. So I don't know where this is going to end, but I don't really see Schneider budging on this. It's like, I mean, if it's a game of chicken, so what? It's like the Seahawks are in a Mack truck, and I picture Earl being in a Mini Cooper going at each other. Basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because see, how I see it is that you've got Earl in a car, and you're not sure where he's headed. Like, honestly, like that's what it is, that it's not.
This isn't helping him at all. I mean, do you think Schneider is and forget that it's June. I mean, say July, August, early September. Do you think Schneider's going to change his stance on this?
No, not necessarily.
I don't either.
But I think that the idea of is it wise, it almost doesn't really matter because it's Earl. And I think that principals can become involved. Like, he may have decided, and I've seen players do this before, where they decide that I'm not willing to take what they're offering. I'm not willing to play unless they give me what I think I'm owed. An example of it, Chike O'Keefer, who's obviously, I mean, he was a pretty good player. He wasn't a bad pass rusher. You know what stuck in his craw was that Grant Wistrom was making so much money. To the point when it came time to negotiate in free agency, the Seahawks matched what he was offered by Arizona. Like, the Seahawks gave him as much as Arizona was going to give him, and maybe in some regards even gave him a better opportunity. He couldn't get over how much Grant Wistrom was making. So he ended up making a decision that wasn't about sort of what was best for him economically, because there's no income tax here. Like, it was a financially better situation for him to stay with the team he knew, but there was a principal that got involved, and you see that happen. So that's where I think of, I don't think it's two cars speeding toward each other. I think you've got Earl on his own path, and you're trying to figure out, like, how do I get him to steer the car so it comes back to the Virginia Mason Athletic Center here on the shores of Lake Washington? What's the best way to do that? Because I don't know if this is practical at all. I don't think it's practical. I don't think what he's doing makes it more likely he's going to be happy. But I don't know how you get him to change his course without just saying, all right, Earl, we'll give you what you want.
Yeah, it does kind of worry me. And especially look at the amount of fines. I wonder how they calculate those fines. Is it a percentage or it's $84,000?
Percentage of his salary in the season.
$453 for the mini camp.
For the mini camp. It's the same thing as the way the fines work in – like for you remember how the, like, a personal foul fine, like, they escalate over the years, so you get some odd. It started out as like $10,000, and now it's like $12,435 for a face mask.
Right. So yeah, but it does bother me that now that he's turning down this path where all of a sudden you're going to get stubborn, and it's kind of the same thing that happened with Cam Chancellor, and it usually results in either, you know, you trade him or get rid of him, or the player comes back into camp with his tail between his legs. And that's what I'm kind of worried about with Earl, that he's not going to want to do that. And look, Earl can sit there and say, look, I'm the best safety in the NFL, and not be exaggerating one bit, not one bit. So, yeah, that's, I don't know, until the whole idea of getting, you know, the Seahawks to just reward him, do whatever, now all of a sudden there's getting a standoff, and for the first time of him not being here, I realized it when I was out there watching practice, that I'm concerned about the situation.
Is it because of the other guys that are there?
No, I mean, look, you know the thing we heard about David Moore, about that step up. You know, you want to hear that about. Now, he did mention Delano Hill. Did he call him Delano? Are we calling him the wrong name?
I don't know. We might need to check that out.
Next time he comes in, because some guys are so nice.
He's got a great laugh.
Yeah, and he's, you know, sometimes they don't correct you, but he did mention him. And I didn't hear him say anything about Tedrick Thompson necessarily. You want to hear that. There's a kid out there named T.J. Mutcherson, who's from UCF, where both the Griffin brothers went. He's playing his tail off. He's out there making plays all over the place. So he had an interception today and knocked a ball down. And I've watched him. He just always seems to be in the right position and everything. But, yeah, you'd like to hear something out of, the other safeties that they look good and, that maybe that would make you feel a little bit better about the free safety. But, look, it doesn't matter. If Tedrick Thompson and Delano Hill are playing their best, I still don't think it's going to be Earl Thomas.
It is Danny David Moore here. We're going to sweep the dial next, and that includes LeBron. He's no longer interested in his legacy. It's about comfort at this point. Please, we'll hear more next.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
No, I've not picked up the Duke and started throwing it yet, and I don't want to skip steps. I'm trusting the process that I'm in right now very, very much. I'm trusting myself in this process. And when the time is right, I'll pick it up.
Time was right today. Andrew Luck threw a football. Am I the only one that thinks it's weird that he hasn't come back from a shoulder surgery in like 14 months?
Yeah.
Like, it seems weird.
It is weird. And by the way, his voice is, he sounds like Lurch.
Yeah, he does.
From the Monsters? Yeah. Monsters?
I was going to say, that was not altered. It sounded like it was like I put a little baritone in.
Tranquilizer dart.
No,
exactly. That's what I would tell him. I'd say, hey, say this. It puts the lotion in the basket. But, I feel bad for him. I know him to be a really nice guy. I've not met him. I've never met just all the people that I know from Stanford and haven't sat next to his dad during a game and how humble Oliver Luck is. And he was just such a big, bruising dude. Remember him in college when he ran over that defensive back from Cal? And then
I remember scoring along the left sideline one time. I mean, he ran 60 yards.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like he'd be that fast, but he is.
Yeah, and then one time he actually, he could have got a penalty because there was a fumble and he just crushed a linebacker.
Sharice Wright. I think it was. Wasn't it a corner from USC?
Was it a corner?
I'm not sure. He put his head down.
Next year it'll be a defensive lineman because the tails get bigger. But, he just crushed the guy. I mean, he was a hitter. He's a tough guy. And they were talking about how he was the best prospect since John Elway. And he's had a good career, but it's not been great by any means. Not what we all thought it would be. It's sad.
A lot of interceptions. So I'm anxious to see what he can do this year, though. The Colts going without him, and they could be a playoff team with him.
There was a show called One of the Boys. It was about a female sportscaster, and one of her friends who was a TV announcer tried to do his home run call as "It puts the lotion in the basket."
That was a good show.
Like Nelson,
it's based in Chicago.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz steps to the plate and puts the lotion in the basket. It did not catch on like wildfire. The call.
That was kind of a creepy scene.
Yeah,
from Silence of the Lambs.
I think LeBron is completely comfortable with his legacy. I think he believes that his titles and what he has accomplished have fulfilled what he's wanted. I think at this point he's just trying to find some happiness, trying to find some comfort, and that comfort may still be in Cleveland. I mean, I think it's a mistake to take the Cavs off the board. I think the Cavs are under serious threat from several teams, but I think the Cavs are absolutely still on the board for him.
Oh, LeBron's looking for some comfort. I want to bring this up because earlier on Bob Gross and Tom today, Tom said something and he just nailed it. He said something about these professional athletes that make all this money and then all of a sudden start posing these existential questions. Am I really free? And, all this crap. And that's what this LeBron thing is. Like, he's trying to find some comfort and happiness. Like, if you can't find, first of all, if you can't find some joy in life, I mean, come on, man. Get with the program. This show brings me joy, Danny.
Does it?
Yes. And when Jim, says that he likes the Mariners better than the Seahawks because none of them have threatened to pummel him, that brings me joy. But, I mean, look, money's not everything. And again, I do think money is a difficult thing for people to handle. But, just the fame and everything, like, really, you're not comfortable, LeBron, and you're not happy. You're looking for some happiness.
Can I just clarify that was Brian Windhorst's He was inferring that. So I don't know that that was a direct quote from him at all. And he was basically being asked about the fact, like, is he going to chase another ring? Is he comfortable with what he will be remembered for? And he's saying that, no, he might actually just want to play the rest of his career and find happiness and not to be chasing championships anymore.
Okay, well, forget everything I said.
Yeah, but no.
No, it's true. You follow.
I already had.
I just... Wait,
did that bring you joy, Dave?
We've got some more crap coming up in sweeping.
Actually, Jim, is decent at busting chops. I do appreciate that about him.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Sometimes you go too far.
Well, of course. That Windhorse guy, isn't he supposed to be the LeBron reporter?
Yeah, actually,
how did he become that?
No, his title is LeBron Whisperer because he covered LeBron since he entered the league, I believe, for the Akron Journal, the Akron Beacon Journal.
He went down to Miami and covered it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He traveled with him?
Yes. You could say he's nursing at the teat of LeBron
so he's
James.
Like a Japanese reporter who follows you, Darvish, around. And
yes. Yeah.
So he just... So,
exactly.
So wherever he goes next year, we'll find that Windhorse guy, too?
Yeah, he's going to trail along.
That's a great analogy, actually, because Shohei Ohtani has like a whole group of... Like, they're just dedicated to him. I feel like that's the same thing with LeBron. But seriously, I mean, he was all angry and pounding the whiteboard, and everybody's all worried about his happiness and everything. I mean, if he's given that impression in the least, I mean, I think you better back up and take a look.
It's possible when LeBron moves to wherever he's going next that he'll load Windhorst into a little modified Cat City in the back of the U-Haul that he's put together.
I don't think it'd be little.
Yeah. I was going to say more like a horse trailer.
Those are the jokes the morning show is supposed to make.
You know, I'm constantly under the pressure. I can't go nowhere and work out by myself. Fans come meet me at the field. You know, I can't do nothing normal. You know, you guys write about me every day. My mom, my kids here. So we have to deal with these type of things, you know. And I started to think to myself, am I really free? You know, I can't really express myself in this game. I can't really tell you guys how I feel. You guys make the pressure to put pressure on me all the time. Am I really free? You know, and I go to asking myself that in regards to taking away time from my kids and everything that's going on. So I had to get away to, you know, free my mind.
Yeah, you know, pressure and stress is when you can't make your house payment or you can't find a job or, you know, possibly a place to sleep. Yeah, you know, this is same thing with exactly what Tom was talking about. And really, I mean, nobody wants to hear that, first of all. Well, let's just go back. Chuck Knox, who recently passed away. Nobody wants to hear your sad story. Tell it walking, is what he would say. You know, that's the number one principle. And look, again, money's not everything, but you have plenty, and you should be happy, and you're worried about all of these people. And I love this whole thing about the big bad media. When did that become a thing? Would you say in the last 10 years or...
Yes. The way that it's referred to as he is, where it's this... They give the image of paparazzi that are following their every move and scrutinizing everything they do. It's been in the last 10 years.
Yeah. You guys in the media.
Correct.
Right. Yeah, it's just very annoying to me. But again, you know, we talked earlier about with the professor that's one of the reasons why I think Mike Tomlin is such a great coach. Because, and not only that, I think Antonio Brown said something about show up to camp. Like, you got to show up, and Le'Veon Bell's not there. And then he said, oh, I wasn't talking about him. So you got those two guys. You got Ben Roethlisberger, who's the drama queen that makes things up. And yeah, he's able to get a winning team every year. Do you guys feel sorry for Antonio Brown?
I don't feel sorry at all for him. And I think that what he's saying is, so he makes a lot of money because people care an awful lot about football. And that's just part of it. If you're going to be good at football and you're going to make that kind of money, people are going to pay a lot of attention to what you do. And that's the trade-off. And if you don't want that, go work at a bank.
Yeah. Well, also, didn't he do Dancing with the Stars? And mm-hmm. he's on every single television show that asks him to go on.
And yeah, face,
you can say no to NFL.
Right, right.
You're not required to broadcast via Facebook your coach's post-game press message to the team either. So he doesn't exactly seem like he's shy.
Put every action that you have in life out there for everyone to see. I'm sorry if you get scrutinized.
I wish that this is radio, but I wish you could have seen Jessamine's mock crying over there. It was perfect.
I have a really good ugly cry.
That is Sweep the Dow. It's brought to you by Specialty Insulation. That wraps up the happy hour, which is brought to you by Heritage Distillings BSB, their brown sugar bourbon. We've got Justin Coleman, Seahawks nickel corner extraordinaire. He's going to join us next.